This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
I actually liked For the Dogs by Drake. This is called In Defense of Drake. This is Derek G Speaks Volumes. Hello, I am your host that talks about, thinks about music and culture, and I have been wanting to talk about Drake for a while. I have been riled up by all the conversation around Drake's recent album. I am contributing to that, and if you listen to this podcast, watch it wherever you are, this isn't going to be a short one. It's going to be as long as it needs to be, because I want to take my time with it. This is not clickbaity. It's as in-depth of my opinion and conversation as we're going to get. So hello, if you are new to this, or if you enjoy it, I'd appreciate it if you subscribe. I'd appreciate it if you leave a comment, a rating, anything like that. It helps me, helps the pod, helps it grow, helps to find more people. But thank you. For a bit of a opener, a bit of an introduction to many of you, this can be served as a few different functions. It can either be an introduction to Drake, if you're not a fan. It can be a counter to the discussions that often happen in regards to Drake. It can be a bit of a celebration of Drake. It can be something that can help position Drake for you if you don't really know how to place him or you've never gotten into him before. I want it to be about my experience with Drake, my very biased experience of Drake, and why I think that he is significant, why he is important. He is one of the most important artists of the last 10 years, but yet he's clowned a lot. And I think people almost enjoy that. I think that happens a lot. So how I'm going to break it down. We're going to talk about a little bit of context. We're going to talk about how he's been an innovator. We're going to talk about his appeal, his career, his influence, his business savvy. And then lastly, at the very end, if you make it, some of the criticisms as well. Cool. So, like I said, this is totally biased. This is not objective. I like to try to be objective. And this podcast, I will try to be. But obviously, the criticisms are at the end for a reason, because I find them less interesting. And let's start here. I have been a fan of Drake's since So Far Gone, since the mixtape, since his breakout mixtape in 2008, I want to say. And what really blew my mind about that is, as a music fan, as we all are, I was amazed at the genre clashing that he was doing, that he was approaching rap in a way, to my younger ears, in a way that felt refreshing, new, and different to who was around at the time. So for context, when he came out in 2008, well, he was doing stuff before that, obviously, and was also Jimmy Brooks, I forget his name, in Degrassi. He was around, but when he had his breakout in 2008, the biggest rappers in the world were Kanye West, Eminem, 50 Cent, Lil Wayne, and he was an actor, of course. He's also 2 months older than me. I just never really assumed that he was my age, but yeah. And I guess that gets me into the first bucket of conversation. The first chapter in defense of Drake is innovation, because I think for a lot of people, and this happens with every single artist and genre that you don't live through, a lot of people forget that he was the guy that broke the rules. Because you might have artists like Neo, you might have artists like Chris Brown, you might have artists like Lil Wayne and Kanye West. None of those were both at the same time. And I remember at the time, there were a lot of people arguing, discussing, can you do that? Is he a rapper? Is he a singer? Is he a good rapper? Is he a good singer? And it takes someone to put themselves out there and say, I'm both. And I think that is why, up until this day, he is still polarizing, because I think a lot of people don't really understand what he is. And so for a lot of, on the more simplistic level, for the people that don't like him, don't like to accept that he is both things at the same time. And it's not to be understated, this fact, because it's so normal now where you have artists like SZA, artists like Frank Ocean, who both rap and sing at the same time. It's more blurred than it ever has been, whereas I feel like Frank Ocean is as much of a rapper as he is a singer. Same goes with SZA. Drake was doing something where it wasn't obvious that you should be allowed to do that. I've always wanted to do a podcast series, where it's talking about people who broke the rules, that people question, oh, you're allowed to do that? And he was one of them. And that has been the cementing and foundation of his style. He is a heavy collaborator with 40, Noah Shabib, who is his main producer. And when we talk about Lil Wayne and Kanye West, I think that is a good place to blend. And Chris Brown / Neo, a good blending of what he sounded like in the early days. So when he did the song Say You Will, which features a beat from 808s and Heartbreaks, where Drake just raps for a good 5 minutes solid with no hook or chorus, that is the foundation to his sound and the foundation to 40's sound, which is these filtered out highs. It kind of sounds like, I think they describe it as like underwater sounding. So you've got this nice thumping clear bass, but then the highs kind of swirl in and out of this kind of underwatery sound, as if your head goes underwater and then comes back up. I also liked with that mixtape is that he mixed things like Peter, Bjorn and John and Licky Lee in his samples. And that was like, wait, at the time, remember, if it's 2008 and you've got Kanye West, you've got Rick Ross and you have Lil Wayne and it's all really decadent and luxurious. And then you have someone rapping over Licky Lee. It was exciting. It was different. And, you know, he's biracial. And I think that adds to the sound that he was exploring, that it wasn't fully one way or the other. Who's sampling Peter, Bjorn and John besides Drake at that point in time? It goes without saying that he was more on the pop side of rap, but not as pop as you'd say, not that they were exactly similar times as Macklemore or B.O.B., but there was a more of a appeal where he had his head up, he was looking down the camera, he was confident, he had this smile to him that was a lot more pop than you would consider something like Lil Wayne, which his flow and vocal delivery sound like Lil Wayne at the time, except he was a lot more like fresh-faced and young. The next thing of his innovation at the time was these long confessional diaries type meandering songs like that Say You Will track, where it was almost innovative in a sense that it's like he's just going in like he's writing a diary. And I think that, again, stood out quite singularly. Now, if you think about now in terms of rappers who do that, maybe J. Cole does a little bit of that. Kanye has done the later tracks on his albums. But as a signature, you know that kind of da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. And it keeps going. That is a Drake signature. And I think it definitely goes underrated how important that type of diary type Drake sound is to music. And I think that's probably why a lot of people are bugged by him, because he does kind of do, not that he can be compared too much to Taylor Swift, but I think that a lot of people feel like they have a parasocial relationship with Drake, more so than they do, say, Kanye West. Kanye West is a untouchable, unreachable person, whereas Drake seems to be in his DMs. He seems to be flying out fans, meeting fans, sharing their TikToks. He seems to be someone through the confessional style of his music that people feel like they know a lot more and feel like they know a lot more about. So wrapping up the innovation section, I think that people underestimate how not only did he change the face and sound of R&B and pop and hip hop, but also that he became this figure that people feel attached to and have a bond to that they've developed over time through his confessional storytelling. Let's move on to appeal. Who is his music for if you are not into him? So I would say that if you're not into Drake by now, you're probably not going to be, because he's been around for long enough and you might like Hotline Bling, you might like Tootsie Slide, but trying to get into Drake, it's not like he is difficult to get into, but you probably either like him or you dislike him at this point. So I don't have much advice for you there, but who is this for? It is often said, this is not an original thought, but he is rapping for the guys and the girls. He is, because he mashes the two genres, he makes music that is appealing to both men and women. And that is something that can be polarizing. for some people, they can't necessarily handle that, that he can be in his feelings. He can be talking about his mom. He can be talking about something a lot more sad and lonely. But then he can be like this tough guy that is bragging about his wealth. He's bragging about his women. And some people, myself included, can enjoy both either in the same track or separate the two and see them as different things. Where some people be like, oh, Drake is too soft. Oh, he's trying to like put his chest out and rap like this. But I think he can be both. And I think that's what appeals to a lot of people. He is popular. I don't need to explain to you why he's popular. He's so popular. But I think that you've got this audience where you might have people like me who's kind of in the middle of both those two styles. You see, I've seen so many videos of, you know, basketball teams and they're like, what's your favorite artist? What's your favorite track? What's your favorite album? And so many basketball players say Drake. I think that they will be listening to, if you're reading this, it's too late. They are listening to What a Time to Be Alive, whereas someone like me is listening to Honestly Nevermind and So Far Gone. The target audience, I think, which is what I've been a bit annoyed about with the discourse with Drake on the internet with his latest album, is someone like my wife. And I mean that, obviously, with the utmost love and affection, which is to say that she doesn't take music as seriously as me. That's good. That's a good thing. She doesn't think about his legacy. She doesn't think about his discography. She doesn't think about the dips and the valleys and the peaks and the troughs. She just puts on Drake. She is in the top, you know, percentile for Spotify Wrapped of Drake listeners. And this album comes out. She doesn't hear about it. I tell her about it. She's like, great. She's put it on once so far. She's like, I like it. She hasn't put it on since, and she will put it on when she remembers and then enjoy it and pick out the tracks that she likes. So I think that that is the ideal Drake listener, someone that doesn't take things too seriously, someone that just enjoys him for what it is and doesn't think about where he is in the pantheon and how he compares to Eminem and Kendrick and Kanye West. I have a confession to make too. I would say that I enjoy Drake much more than Kendrick Lamar. Does that mean anything in about, is he better, a better rapper? Is he better us? I'm saying I enjoy Drake more. On the regular, his music is something I can go to and listen to more often. I think Kendrick Lamar is brilliant. But I think there's a reason why Kendrick Lamar likes Damn so much as a record, because he can probably put it on and be like, this is a vibe, I enjoy it. Whereas To Pimp a Butterfly is conceptual. It's more something to challenge you mentally and sonically rather than something that is purely enjoyable as much as it is an intellectual exercise. The way I think about Drake's album, and what, which is why I said at the beginning that I liked For the Dogs, is that I think that he is put and compared to artists that have greatest albums of all time, Frank Ocean, Kendrick Lamar, and they're like, if this was only 8 tracks long, not 23 tracks. I have so many counters to that. Number one, interludes. Rap albums are long because they have interludes. Interludes are part of hip hop, and that makes albums longer. One. Two, rap albums mostly for the longest time have been long because it doesn't have to be a punk rock 35 minute expression to be a true expression of music. Why can't you put out as much music as you like? People like things concise. And I think that the development and evolution of an album has changed. People talk about rappers and like gaming it to game as many streams as possible so they can make more money and be in more algorithms and whatever. But I would argue that if they actually wanted to do that, they'd make a shorter album because you put more bangers on there and they will stream better. Because if you look at a odd 23, 26 track album, the streams slowly decline as you go down. So I don't think that's a fair argument either. I think Drake makes albums more like playlists. And I think people can criticize that. I don't really care about that. I think that it's interesting and it's totally fine because at the end of the day, it's his choice and his expression. If he wanted to put out an album that was 8 tracks long, he would have done it. And he has done What Time to Be Alive. He's done, if you're reading this, it's not too late. He's done enough albums that are shorter. Clearly doesn't want that. I forget the album off the top of my head, but he had an album, the one where it was his dad or something like that on the cover, where it said a playlist by Drake. a playlist. Remember that. So I think that he is playing with, and I don't mean it in some sort of like auto innovative sort of way, but he is playing around with the idea of an album. Because what is an album in 2023? Who knows? People put on albums on shuffle. Start there. That annoys me and upsets me. So people's experience of albums is different. And I think that with Drake, the thing that I think works the most for him is that he creates music for so many styles and different types of people. So what you tend to do, what I tend to do, what a lot of people tend to do, is you listen to an album a few times and then you pull out your favorites and then you move on. And then 3 years later, you'll listen to that album again and you'll discover stuff that didn't hit at the time, and then you'll add those to your playlist as well. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination that Drake is ahead of the curve sonically. He's not pushing sonic boundaries where you're like, oh, this is like Yeezus. I don't like this because it's so rough and I'm not used to it. What he is doing is creating music for different contexts, different people, different times that hit people at certain moments. I've said this somewhere recently. I think it was on the Discord, join the Discord, that we had this conversation going about everyone's top 10 Drake songs. And you'd look at people's lists. I'm like, what's that track? What's that track? And I'm a big Drake fan. But what that says to me is that there are so many songs that just resonate to, let's say there are 100 Drake fans in the world. Don't joke. But like as a round number. And 90 people like Hotline Bling. And then there will be one person that's like, Summer Games is my absolute favorite song from Scorpion. And you'll be like, what does Summer Games sound like? And look, I could be gassing him up too much and being too biased to be like, he, you know, everyone thinks these tracks are trash, but they're actually great and they're for someone. Sure, you could argue that. But I do think that I enjoy Drake for his output. I enjoy Drake for his experimentation with his own sound, and I enjoy the tracks that mean something to me, and I enjoy going back and rediscovering new tracks. Is he designing it like that? I don't know. I think he vibes the tracks that he vibes and he puts them out. Lastly, on the appeal, I think I went a bit over on that one, is that he, with that kind of parasocial thing that I was talking about, he seems a bit goofy. He seems a bit funny. He likes to be seen as a superstar. He likes to be seen as a rich, wealthy tycoon, but he also likes to be seen as like, I'm a nice guy. You know, I can be funny. He does skits. You know, he talks about in interviews, when people meet me, they'll be surprised how nice he is. And that doesn't surprise me, as this parasocial relationship, it does extend to me as well. I do feel like behind closed doors, he's quite sweet and quite quiet, as well as enjoying his other parts of his rap life and all the cars and all the women and all the clubs and all that sort of stuff. I think he can be both, and that's okay. Let's talk about his career. Obviously, he's one of the most prolific, the most successful artists of the last decade. And I think that where he's been able to achieve that is because he, like The Weeknd, knows what a good radio hit is when he hears it. And I think that when you compare him to the greats, I would say that, and don't get triggered by this in the wrong way, because I'm not saying this in any historical context, but I'm using it as a reference point. He's closer to Michael Jackson than he is Kanye West. Now, Michael Jackson has Thriller. He has Off the Wall. But I would argue that people talk less about Michael Jackson's albums as the most significant thing. Say, for example, people talk about the Beach Boys' significant albums more than singular songs. People are talking about Michael Jackson has some of the greatest songs of all time that have continued to exist throughout popular culture. And I think that Drake exists more in a world where he has big songs, and those songs that people relate to define his career more so than his albums, and that's fine. There was an interview with him recently where he was talking to Lil Yachty about his career, and he realizes at his age of, he's if not 37 at this point, I don't know exactly when his birthday is, but when this podcast comes out, he'll be about 37, that he is not at his peak anymore. So he's not putting out songs like God's Plan and Nice for What. And I really liked hearing that. And as a person and a fan of music history, I really enjoyed the idea that he was cognizant of the fact that he wasn't in his prime, which means that he could put out an album like Honestly Nevermind, which I think is a great album. And at the time, everyone hated that album because it's like, what is this? This is weak dance music. This is blah, blah, blah. But go listen back to it. Turn It Up Loud. It's so enjoyable. I ran to it the other day. It is such a fun record. And what I think he is comfortable with and cognizant of is that he is past his peak, which means he can put out whatever albums he likes and it doesn't really matter as long as he enjoys it and has a love and a passion behind it. So Certified Lover Boy, Her Loss, For the Dogs, Honestly Nevermind, these albums have come out. See, people might argue he's putting out too many records. Why can't he save them all up, save the best things, and every 4 years put out an epic? He's like, if I was Drake, I'd be the same. Who cares about putting out an epic? Every song of my album has been in the charts at every one time. What more do you want from me? I just want to have fun. I just want to put out music that I enjoy, that hopefully you'll enjoy too. I'm not overthinking it too much, which I think says a lot, because on the other hand, much love and respect to Frank Ocean, that's the opposite, right? He's put out a mixtape and two albums. Last album was in 2016. The anticipation is so high where you get to the point of, say, Coachella, where people kind of trashed it because, like, you haven't done anything for so long and you come back with this. I thought you were going to drop an album. There's so much expectation and almost hatred in the opposite way. And when he does drop something, if it doesn't sound exactly like Frank Ocean from 2016, people are going to be upset. If he drops a record where he isn't singing and he's just rapping and he's rapping over boom bap, people are like, oh, what is he doing? I just, you know, he should have been doing what he was doing before. You know, he can't win. So I like an artist that is cognizant of where they are in their timeline and can just go out and do it. Let's talk about longevity and influence. He has had so much longevity because he's less of a song that revolutionizes his sound, but more evolves it over time. So he can do the Honestly Nevermind. He can tap into different sounds and genres, but still have classic Drake as part of the sound. And I think that what he's been able to achieve is the ability to bring along his core fans for the ride. People like my wife, she's along for the ride, but he's not doing Yeezus. So she's not like, I'm out because he's totally making horrible music now. There is as much old OG Drake as there's new sounding Drake as well. And how he's managed to achieve that, which some people, which I'll get to later, say is culture vulturing, is through tapping younger artists and evolving sounds through pop culture. So whether it is grime and the London, UK scene, or whether it's Afrobeats, whether it's dance music, he has tapped everyone from Giggs to Burna Boy on tracks. And that has meant that he always has an element of something fresh and new to a Western, largely American audience that might not listen to that much stuff as much. And I think that's smart. It's a clever way to keep your ear and your mind fresh, and has kept his career relevant to the point where people still care about him dropping an album. Do people care about Chris Brown dropping an album now? No. He probably has dropped three in the last 5 years. I didn't know that. So he has always been part of the conversation, which I will get to later about in terms of marketing. In terms of influence, he is the influence of emo rap. He is the guy. He is the one that took the In My Feelings, I'm going to rap for a long time, and birthed artists like Juice WRLD, birthed artists that like to rap and sing. As much controversy and conflict there seems to be around him and XXXTentacion, I think that he's definitely influenced that type of artist as well, where you can go hard, but then you can be quiet and rap over acoustic guitar also. Tyler, the Creator, is a big fan of Drake, because I don't think Tyler could do what Drake does, which is be so vulnerable, I would say, in his rap. And it's sad that when Tyler brought him out for his Camp Flognor that everyone booed him, because I think that the audiences are so different. If you're a Tyler fan, you feel like you're more alternative and left of center. Drake is the antithesis of that. He is mainstream, he is pop, he's an actor, all that sort of stuff. People are like, boo. Whereas you can tell that Tyler's like, hello, this guy is significant, important, and amazing. What's wrong with you? I'm embarrassed by my fans. And he's hugely influential beyond I even know. I know that people like SZA, huge influence, huge fan of Drake. And like I said earlier, takes a lot of what he brought in and stepped out into the world doing and brought that even more to the mainstream. I want to touch briefly on marketing and business. Clearly, he's very wealthy. Clearly, he is a businessman that isn't like Jay-Z, isn't like Lil Wayne. He doesn't have a label like that. He has October's Very Own, but he doesn't have that sort of mogul type vibe to him. He seems like someone that trades more off his music and more off the influence surrounding the music. He has OVO, he has Nocta, he has these different partnerships, but I think that the leverage that he has the most and where he's made the most money is off his music. Now, there's a TikTok, or not a TikTok, there's a video. Go look at him on YouTube. I'll reference it in the show notes where he talks about marketing. He did an interview in the early, maybe 2007 or something like that, where he's still unsigned and he's going through the deals from whether it's Def Jam or Roc Nation or whatever. And he's waiting for the right deal to come along. And he's quite methodical about knowing that he is special and that he has something that he doesn't want to give to anyone. And he talks about marketing and he talks about how marketing is so important and something that people underestimate. And I think that is something that isn't talked about enough in terms of Drake's business savvy and success, is that he thinks about marketing more than you'd realize. I think that Kanye West is very, many ways, these guys are like two sides of the same coin, where Kanye West thinks about marketing in terms of controversy, saying horrible things, starting beefs, you know, calling people out. And that is his form of marketing. Whenever he really ramps up and Kanye's really in the news, you're like, okay, what's he dropping? Come on, just get over with it. And I think Drake causes a marketing stir in different ways, whether it's who he has in his music videos, whether it is the sound of his music that has changed, whether it is how he involves different people like his son in his albums, whether it is putting out a cover art that has Halle Berry getting slimed that wasn't approved, and there's a little small little storm in a teacup of people talking about the controversy around that. He thinks about marketing, but doesn't think about marketing in the sense of upsetting you, because he seems like a nice guy, parasocial. So that's where he doesn't get as much credit, but you can't get that wealthy, that rich, that over the top without being savvy about how you sell your music. And how you sell your music has a lot to do with radio, has a lot to do with pop bangers, Nice for What, God's Plan, Hotline Bling being the peak of that. But even Hotline Bling, I remember when Hotline Bling came out, I heard it and I'm like, what is this kind of halftime, not quite rap, not quite pop, but a hit? What did he hear? I get it, but I still don't get it. You know what I mean? It's something that I think that he has been able to pierce through the mainstream in really unusual and unexpected ways. This is so biased. I love it. Hey, pause. Interrupting for a second to present the sponsor for this week's podcast, TurntableLab.com. They've been such a loyal, great sponsor to the pod. If you want anything to do with hi-fi and audio gear, if you're a beginner, if you're an enthusiast, what am I? I'm kind of in the middle. Go to Turntable Lab. They have everything from turntables to slip mats to, you know, the thingies that you dust your records with. They have the Lab, which is 100,000 record plus record store, where you can take advantage of their 4 or more deal, where you can take 10% off if you buy 4 or more records. It's got everything you could possibly ever need. Plus, if you go to turntablelab.com/Derek, you can see a few of my selections of things that I would buy or I own, my turntable, my stylus, everything like that. So come on, support the pod by supporting them. It is turntablelab.com. Back to the episode. So I've been rambling for about half an hour now. So let's go with the criticism, which in defense of Drake, I am going to defend. So he's an actor. He's corny. Those are two of them. And hey, I would say that if, like at the beginning, if you aren't into Drake now, you probably won't be, because I can understand this criticism in a sense that I haven't been fully able to get behind Childish Gambino, because I used to watch him on YouTube as part of Derek Comedy. Then I watched him on Community as Troy. And then he comes out in a more emotional kind of like shoulders slumped, eyes facing the ground, emotional rapper. And I'm like, wait, you're a comedian though. And sure, of course you can have different sides of you, but I'm like, you're really good at this because I feel like you're acting. And I just couldn't get behind Childish Gambino's music. I still can't. I think that he's really talented. And whether it's Atlanta or his albums, I think he's super talented, but I just can't get behind it because I can't believe it. And I can relate to it, but I didn't feel like Drake was like that to me. I'm not saying he's different, but I can see why people see that, because he has a persona and he has this, like, is he a player? Is he a nice guy? Why is he acting like this in front of the camera? He's not actually tough. And fair enough, but I would say that I don't have that same feeling, because I feel like he plays these characters knowingly and can turn them on and off when he wants and doesn't do it to hurt anyone's feelings. And so can Charles Gambino, but yeah, like I said, that ship has sailed for me. Matty Healy from the 1975 seemingly plays an exaggerated version of his persona. I can't get behind it because he's always putting people offside and being horrible with that persona. Plus, I don't really love the 1975's music. There's a criticism of people saying, rap your age. You're 36, 37. You should be rapping about your children. You should be rapping about other things in your life that are not rapping about women, not rapping about getting people pregnant. I think that that is a very invalid comment to make, because everyone can live their life how they should. Would you like to hear about him and how he has plans to have some sort of terrazzo installation of his new benchtop in his kitchen? Do you want to rap about him thinking about what private schools his kids should go to? Do you want him to rap about how he's managing his finances and his master's? No, of course you don't. He is relevant because he raps about things that are either youthful or universally relatable, or he taps rappers to rap with that are young and keeps him relevant in an audience that these rappers, these young rappers, respect Drake, and so they want to do things with him. Going back to marketing for a second, he's involving himself with the streamers like Kai Cenat. He's involving himself with young creators who are fans of his. And he's going like, hey, you're a fan of me. I'm a fan of you. Come here. Come into my world. And people are like, don't hang around with 21-year-olds. Sure, if I'm hanging around with 21-year-olds, is that weird? Well, it depends, actually, because when I do my All Together Now event and there are uni students there who love what I do, I'm not trying to be young. I am happy that I can provide education, entertainment, comfort, community for young people with the stuff that I do. So I think that criticism is kind of moot. I got this horrible DM once when I shared something on stories about Drake, where someone talked about how he was owned by Pusha T in that horrible back and forth diss track battle, which was funny at the time, extremely immoral now being a dad, in terms of Pusha T going out there and exposing that he had a son, because it was clearly complicated and not, he wasn't hiding the kid from the world seemingly, but as Drake says, he was trying to figure out if the kid was even his and all these sort of things. So a lot of people clown him for that. I think it was an iconic time in rap music history. It will go down in history forever. Obviously, Pusha T won, even though he pushed the boundaries too far. People hold him to that and people go, ah, what a loser, he lost. Fine, whatever. And then you have people talking about his son and how he potentially handled that. And it's not no one's business. It's no one's business. It's not my business. If you had a son and it was a secret, like, fine. This horrible message really just went to town, sending me like, I hate Drake because he, you know, he was hiding his son from the world. And just like, wow, okay, don't take it that seriously. It's fine. As I said earlier, there's a lot of criticisms around too much music, putting out too much music. And that is a valid criticism on one hand. I think if I wasn't at this age and having experienced so much music that I think I would have held on to as a purist of music, but I'm a lot more, especially as I commentate on music so much now, I'm a lot more fluid with what music is and how it's expressed. So I don't think that you need to have a perfect discography to be an influential artist. There's also beefs with Kanye and how Kanye seems to bring him under his wing and then push him away, which I don't think people therefore go, I hate Drake because Kanye hates Drake. I think it's an unfortunate criticism of his character and how he's treated. And seemingly Drake was really admiring of Kanye, and then he kind of just made fun of him and brushed him aside, which is a bit sad because you know, never meet your idols in that way. There's also big conspiracy theories, which I'm not going to necessarily address personally, about XXXTentacion and his plagiarism of X's flow, and then in the song KNT, and then subsequently people saying that Drake was the one that put the hit out on X, which is insane. There are better ways to win than to kill someone, and I think that conspiracy theory is so wild to me. And if you feel like you're not a fan of him because of that, you know, to each their own, but that's wild to me. There is criticisms as well about dating, who he dates, who he sleeps with, who he speaks to in the DMs. And I think in the past there was one with Millie Bobby Brown or something like that, and saying he was a fan. People were like, do you know she's 13 or something like that? He didn't choose wisely with that Millie Bobby Brown. I hope that's not the case, but there's nothing out there that's necessarily proven, but I'm not trying to defend it either. Lastly, people talk about him and ghostwriters and him needing help in order to write his songs. Have you heard his lyrics? Have you heard his music? I don't think that what he does requires ghostwriters. It's very personal. It can be very braggadocious. It can be very goofy. It can be very funny. I don't think that sort of music would require ghostwriters. Kendrick Lamar would require ghostwriters if anything to be super, you know, smart and political about things. So that criticism I find a bit strange. So there you go. That is In Defense of Drake. I spoke for a while and I'm happy that I did. And I took my time with it. Leave a comment somewhere. Message me somewhere. I'm sure I've missed something. I've always missed something that someone will remind me of. But I wanted to give my personal perspective of how I think Drake's important and relevant to music, how people are often frustrated by what I think are the wrong things because it's just music and it's not that serious. And I think that he is far beyond an important figure that he often gets clowned because he's corny, because he puts out too music, and this noise can overtake just how significant he is. Will he stand the test of time? I think that in my experience with Drake, his albums get better with time because I don't enjoy everything at the time, which means I take the best bits that I like, then don't listen to it, then go back to it, and then discover new tracks. I think the jury is still out within 15, 20 years whether he will stand the test of time, because he doesn't necessarily make conceptual music. I think conceptual music a lot of the time stands the test of time because they're trying to capture a moment. They're trying to say something that reflects the time. I think he's trying to make music that is more fun. I think he makes good radio pop bangers. I think he makes enjoyable albums that you can take your favorites from. And the people from millennial to Gen Z, older Gen Zs, will enjoy it for the rest of their lives. Will people pick up Drake's album, 20-year-olds, in 50 years' time and go, wow, what's this? Who's Drake? I think certain albums, maybe, but I think that there'll be other artists, say like Kanye West, who have records that push the boundaries and represent a lot more in music history that might stand more of the test of time. But we will only know. Check back in with me in 2063 and we can chat again and see if he did stand the test of time. I actually can't wait for that episode, quote unquote, if I'm still doing this. Thank you for listening. You guys are great. If you've hung around for this long, I appreciate you. And have a good rest of your week. Bye-bye.